Just hanging out, waiting to talk with you guys.
Yep.
And play some video games.
Do it right now.
All right. So we actually started recording already. We missed the bath salts part, so if you want to bring that back up, you definitely can.
Cool. Yeah. I was just telling him that Justin's on bath salts at this exact moment. It's going to be a real good show.
It should be, hopefully, with those kind of results.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I guess we'll start this formally. So, comes naturally, we are...
Joe.
Mike.
I'm Cody, and we have two special guests today. Gentlemen, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Oh, hey, I'm Aaron. And I'm Justin.
All right, so quick little thing, we're going to go over business real fast. So, Mike, would you like to handle that real quick?
Yes, just remember, as always, this podcast is completely free. So if anybody wants to show any type of support whatsoever, all we do is ask you to go to the Facebook page, like and share the Facebook page, head on over to Twitter, follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is
@comesnaturalpod.
And then after you do that, please go out to iTunes, rate, subscribe, and please review the podcast. And then tell everybody you know to listen to the podcast.
All right, so that's the business. Thank you, Mike.
That'll be longer when we get sponsors.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. when people pay us. So real quick, for our special guests, if you guys like to real quick talk about who you are and what you guys do.
Oh, we're filmmakers, and we made a movie called Resolution. We did a segment for VHS Viral, and we made a movie called Spring. And we do lots of other stuff that's less noteworthy. Aaron, do we have anything else to brag about? Isn't that pretty much it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You should lead with the less noteworthy stuff and then head into filmmaker.
Yeah, that's how unnoteworthy we are. There's this short film online called Wrecked that we never get to promote or anything, but it's really good. Yeah, it's really good. It has this guy named Kasim G in it. He probably would hate us saying YouTube celebrity, but it's true. That's exactly what he is. And he's really funny and stuff.
Where can people watch that?
Just Google our names and the word wrecked, and you'll find it.
All right.
Yeah. I have a feeling that you'd find a lot of other pictures and stuff.
Well, if you spell it wrong with
that. Basically, that will also probably get you a lot of pictures of us at film festivals.
And other things if you spell wrecked wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
Even if you spell it right, we're professional self-wreckers.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right. So we're going to fire off some questions at you guys, if you don't mind, about a couple things.
Yes.
Mostly the movies, and then maybe some bath salt stories, maybe. And then actually, Justin and Aaron, but Justin, I want to hear the tattoo story that I watched a video online of, if you remember.
Oh, is it for the film festival? The film festival promo video?
Was it Germany?
Yeah, when I get a tattoo, we usually just weave in some kind of shoot into it because it gives us production value for our dumb little no-budget videos.
Gotcha. So yeah, I thought it was really funny because
he gets a tattoo for every single video. It's really insane. He looks like that guy in 47 Ronin.
Oh,
he's like completely tatted up. He looks great.
Fantastic.
Well, you know things are going well if you're covered in ink, then.
Of course.
Yeah.
Or we've made enough stuff to get covered in ink.
Mm-hmm.
So then, what's the tattoos of? Is it something from the film or just like completely random shit?
It's just completely random stuff.
Fair enough. And this butterfly was when we did Resolution.
Yeah, it does. It does have the. I do have the Resolution butterfly. Oh my god! And there's other stuff too. I mean, there's the spring unicorn. There's I have Vinnie Curran's face on my bicep.
Which bicep?
Left bicep, because Peter Salello is already on my right bicep. Well, no, he's on your elbow, so that you can like if you position them properly, you can make them kiss.
Aww.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's nice. Really cool.
Together forever. So I guess first question go into about the movies. So they are, you guys are into horror movies. It's pretty obvious from the movies themselves. What made you want to make horror movies over anything else?
Well, I mean, you know what's weird is I mean not to in any way shy away from horror movies, but we kind of just like anything that has, I guess, like a fantastic element to it, you know, something that's like slightly out of our real world. I couldn't really tell you exactly where that comes from, but I realized the other day that I think it comes from reading a lot of Stephen King when I was growing up. Because, you know, I don't know if he's ever done a straightforward book. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they all have at least some kind of like minor magic in it or something like that. Even like The Green Mile. Oh, The Shawshank Redemption, I guess. But reading a whole bunch of him probably, and, you know, watching a ton of movies, but I didn't watch anything that was particularly, I didn't watch any like art movies or anything like that growing up. I grew up on like Star Wars, Jurassic Park, all of that.
It's the good stuff.
And so those as they're more like, I mean, Jurassic Park in some ways is a horror movie, you know, but, no, I didn't really grow up on a diet of horror movies of any sort, really. In fact, I'm pretty sure I wasn't allowed to watch most of them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the things that you would call traditionally horror elements that are in our films for me kind of comes from a place of like, if you're trying to inspire an emotion in your audience, I think that the by far the hardest one to do is to scare people. And the thing is like most horror movies don't scare people. They're just like I don't think anyone finds like Evil Dead, the remake, scary. It's just like, oh, I'm really impressed by all that gore or like the artistry or something. I don't think anyone actually is like, oh my God, I'm so terrified. But like the idea of actually being able to like scare someone with an idea, like an idea that gets under someone's skin is a fun thing to do if you can pull it off. And there's a lot of that in like coming up with the ideas and resolution. It's like, you know, how do you actually make an audience feel unnerved? And then with Spring, it was more about like, okay, well, how do you tap into the psychology of an audience with these elements in a way that's, you know, this, it's never going to be really scary because now we're showing it and we're getting more into the kind of visceral creature effects work stuff. But like, how could you, the idea of going, for example, from like a sexual situation for people where you have them sort of aroused sexually and then going directly into the body horror stuff, if it's effective, you're delivering a really powerful emotion. And there's something really appealing about those things in horror films. But that said, I don't think that most horror films strive for that. And I don't think that there's a lot of them that pull it off. Either one of those things.
Yeah, a lot of horror movies, especially nowadays, don't actually have any substance to them. Like you said about Evil Dead, it's just for gore.
Yeah, it's also, I think horror movies are kind of a thing where it's like, oh, it's just like, it's like a brand, or it's like, you know, certain kids like to shop at Hot Topic. It's just that's what horror movie is a lot. And a lot of times it's not a filmmaker-driven genre. A lot of times it's more of a producer driven genre where they kind of have like the bottom line in mind, where they're like, well, we got to put a jump scare every 15 minutes. And you know, if we put any character development, then, you know, our audience is just going to turn it off. They just won't get it, which is untrue. I do think that, but I do think that mentality is pretty common in the making of horror films.
Yeah,
I agree.
And it's unfortunate because it is more in the suspense that you find horrifying. And the awkward situations, like you mentioned, the sexual situations that you get to that end up being more horrifying to me than just the blood and guts. I mean, Evil Dead was a good movie, and I liked the remake of it, but it was more, you know, like cringeworthy because you're watching that one chick cut her tongue in half, and it's not really horrifying.
Yeah, it's not scary. It's just kind of like, oh, gross, I don't want to look at that, you know?
Yeah.
Or I do, but I don't. That's that thing.
Yeah.
That's why people like watching it. I think that in some ways a lot of horror films get by on producers sort of relying on the loyalty to a brand.
And I admittedly loved Resolution because of you didn't know so much about what was going on, like what the creature was, what even it looked like. I mean, what was the thing that you guys filmed? I mean, the shadow was what in actuality?
Well, we don't want to tell you that. It gives the whole thing away, you know?
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
That's all the fun of it.
Yeah, Joe.
Sorry. I didn't mean to try and disturb the magic.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, you
have to. Then... Where did the idea come from? You mentioned that you really enjoyed Stephen King, and when you mentioned that, it actually does make sense. I do see a lot of Stephen King's influence in Resolution and in Spring. But was there anything else that kind of sparked the idea of putting two guys in a cabin and going from there?
I think we stole it directly from Stephen King. Is that what it was, Justin? We read an unpublished short story from Stephen.
Yeah, I spent a year as a hobo behind Stephen King's house. And I just grabbed manuscripts that he didn't make, and but you know what they say? It's not plagiarizing if you change the name.
Nice.
No,
they do say that. Yeah.
I had a question about Resolution. It was your first feature, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So how nervous were you basically in trusting your first, you know, real shot at making a film, which largely relied on two dudes talking to each other for like 70-80% of the movie, and like really having to trust those dudes with a good performance to get what your vision was across?
What was the question exactly? I'm sorry.
Like, was it nerve wracking? Like, was this your first choice? Because, like I said, you it's largely based on the performance of two people.
Yeah.
So, was there any apprehension there, or did you did you know when you saw those actors that they were going to be able to turn in the great performances that they did?
Well, interestingly, I mean, you can kind of take it back a little bit. Is Resolution was made. You know, Justin even wrote Resolution with the exact, like, kind of the thought of how exactly it would get made in his head, you know? So yeah. I think it was more like, you know, rather than kind of, some people like write a spec script and then they like shop it around and try to produce it. In this case, I think the thought was more like, all right, let's write a script we can just go make as soon as the script is like, you know, good and in shape and prop, you know what I mean? Like ready to go. And so in this case, you know, the budget was there, which is his checking account. And, and then, the location was there. It was because it just happened to be some property that, that was way down in San Diego that his dad, ran. And then, and also the actors were there because we'd worked with them on, I think one low budget beer commercial and one spec commercial. And they had kind of the same chemistry. And you can find these online, actually. It's really funny to see the same two people playing kind of a similar relationship but outside of Resolution. So the two actors were in there. And you know, Justin, when he kind of approached me with the script, said it was written for them, and rightfully so.
All right, so on that question or that answer you just gave, how did you two like come together as like this partnership of writing and directing? Like, how did you guys meet, I guess, would be the better question.
We were both interning at a commercial production company in Los Angeles. Aaron had just moved up from Florida, and I was basically on a year off before medical school would start. And we started working together more and more on small projects until we started working together more holistically. But we just met. And I think that like one big thing that really drew us to each other is that you don't meet that many people in Los Angeles that are actually going out and making stuff constantly, even if they're spending their own money doing it or just spending their own resources and time doing it. It's a lot of people that come here to meet the right person and stuff like that. So we really bonded over that. And we just generally get along well, have the same tastes and all that. So it just kind of went from there. It's weird. I don't know if there was ever really discussion of us working together as closely as we do it just sort of, it really is one of these, oh, it just kind of happened.
Because a lot of times when you have those relationships, it's usually like a one's a writer director, the other's a like a producer or anything like that. And you guys seem to work. I mean, obviously, a lot of it's co-written and co-directed that way, and it's just a kind of a strange relationship in the Hollywood sense. You know what I mean? Like a lot, you don't see like you see a lot of partnerships, like a lot of two people working together, but you never see them sharing the roles. I guess is really what I wanted to say. So I thought it was interesting. I thought maybe it was more of a thing we guys kind of just clicked on one writing project. I didn't realize Resolution was Justin's ahead of Aaron being part of it.
Yeah, well, it kind of what we do is very holistic. You know, I mean, we fill in each gap. You know, what one of us can do, the other one, or one of us has trouble with, the other one can do, and vice versa. And so, it wasn't like an immediate thing. It wasn't like, hey, I met you, let's co-direct together. You know, we were both very autonomous type A dudes. And, but it just seemed to, the reality is, you know, once it kind of settles in, the reality is we make better movies together than separate. And so, and on top of that, we have the skill set to make a movie on our own, just between the two of us. And not to say that we don't collaborate with, with all of our, what's the word? Collaborators. I don't know. But it's not to say that we don't collaborate with a whole bunch of really talented people. But it's just in terms of like, you know, writing, producing, directing, cinematography, editing, visual effects, everything but acting, basically, we're able to do ourselves, and kind of just, we can actually go make a movie rather than kind of waiting around because we don't really know, you know, what to do in the other roles, you know?
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
It's worked out pretty well, I would have to say.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because
how did you two come to meet?
Well, the three of us, actually, all three of us worked at Best Buy together.
Yep.
Cool.
And then we all, I think it was comic books that actually...
Comic books and movies, really. Yeah.
Got us realizing we're all kind of the same, in the same area. And it's really funny because all of us have something that's completely different about each other that the other two don't actually share.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Like, Mike is, like, ridiculous into sports and wrestling.
Yeah.
professional wrestling, not actual wrestling. Joe is into space stuff.
Ridiculous nerd.
Super space nerd, yeah. And then I am, I have a lot of problems, but a lot of it has to do with collectibles and ridiculous comic book problems.
Video games and...
Oh, yeah.
Movies.
He's a nerd hoarder.
He has stealth sitting over there.
Shut up.
Have you played Mortal Kombat X yet?
I have. I play it at work all the time because I work at Microsoft now, and we get to play it at work. I just said that to rub it into Joe because he doesn't work there.
Right. I hate him so much. Actually.
Yeah.
I have this. I had this friend in high school. And I was growing up in Florida. And there's this, my friend always hung out with his uncle but in addition to doing that, his uncle was absurdly wealthy. And at one point I asked, I was like, what exactly is it that your uncle does, expecting it to be like, oh, he's a construction contractor, like everybody in Florida, you know? And he's like, my uncle invented the start button.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So he was like a VP at one of like 24 VPs at Microsoft. Might still be, I have no idea.
There's still a lot of them, trust me.
Yeah, I believe it.
Well, now I can't take credit for that. I used that on dates.
That was your pickup line?
Yeah, way back in the day.
That's great. No. That would be like the worst pickup line. They'd be like, oh my God, are you 60?
You know, I was very, very, very young when I thought of it.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't do anything with it. I just thought it up, and then someone else made it eventually. I just assumed that. I just thought of it first.
I missed out on all the money, though. That's why I'm talking to you at a Chili's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three-year-olds don't get royalties from the start button.
Nope. So actually, speaking of a fantasy question about unlimited amount of money. So if someone came up to you with a blank check and said, hey, here's this blank check. I want you to make your passion project? What was the what is the one thing you'd like to make? Like, most outlandish, spend as much money as you want. Like, the guy that came up to you is basically the guy who invented the untieable shoelace.
Or the start button.
Or the start button.
Start button.
What would you guys do? What would you do with that money?
I don't know. Do we have to recoup our expenses?
No. This guy is so dumb with money, he doesn't care.
I'd do the Dark Tower.
Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Yeah. Tying that back into Stephen King, I'd totally do the Dark Tower.
You could buy it for a dollar. That's what he does.
Well, isn't it? They're not production, but they're working on the script for it right now.
Of course they are. They've always been.
But yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I do think that would recoup its budget, and I also think I would do the Dark Tower.
TV series or movie?
Huh?
TV series or movie? Are you doing it?
I think it'd be cool to alternate between them.
I think that could work.
Because there's only like four books that actually concentrate on the actual journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's The Gunslinger, which is basically like a prologue, which could be almost like something released on the internet or is on Netflix or something that everyone could go see before the drawing of the three. And then, most of Wizard in Glass is a flashback. So that can be a standalone thing that doesn't come out in theaters. And then Wolves of the Cala feels like kind of like another, it's like, oh, another adventure in the story of, the Kotet going to the tower. So maybe, I don't really know where Wolves of the Cala would fit in. That could actually still be in the canon. But just because Gunslinger feels like prologue and Wizard in Glass is basically a flashback, those could be maybe something on Netflix or something as part of a series or something like that. I think that said, if it could just be a series, I would watch a 60-hour-long Dark Tower directed by me and Justin.
I would too.
I would too. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Justin?
Yeah, no, I think I'd like to do the same thing. I'd like to do Preacher if someone wasn't already doing it.
Yeah, I saw that you guys tweeted the picture of Art's face.
Yeah.
Because I got excited about that too. I was nervous at first because of who was producing it, but
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, he doesn't really. Yeah.
The thing is, though, is I feel like someone that actually has a sense of humor is probably the right person to do Preacher.
Very true.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. Plus, they've landed people who. It looks like they're going to do a good job with it, at least by the few pictures I've seen online.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks pretty impressive. For the people who haven't read Preacher, it's super bizarre. I mean, there's a character named Arsface who is scarred up and has his mouth looks like a butthole. So that's the name. That's where the name comes from for other people who couldn't imagine what it was.
Yeah.
And he's kind of an asshole anyway, so it fits.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Well, fingers crossed, honestly, for the series. I mean, we publicly will say we'd love to direct an episode. And also, if Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg happen to die, we need someone to carry the torch. Justin and I are very willing to carry on in their memory. If they were to mysteriously die, perhaps.
I'll see what I can do. I mean, maybe. What?
Yeah.
I know people. Yeah, so that'd be pretty crazy.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. What about you guys? What would be your movie? And maybe can we steal it and go make it instead?
You can definitely make it if you want. Because I would... There was so many... I mean, really, I'm well-versed in comic books. If you could see the room, you'd know that. Mm-hmm. There's a wall of them. But there's one I was actually thinking about today when I was organizing stuff poorly that I thought would be perfect for you guys, too. It is a horror book. It's called Severed by Scott Snyder.
Cool.
You should look into it. It's pretty awesome, but it's super dark. Like, good luck trying to get it financed and keep the integrity of the book.
Darkness isn't always a bad thing, but it just depends on how much you'd have to spend on it.
It's
a horror book. For the most part, people seem to be all right with dark.
Yeah, it would not cost a lot of money.
That's cool.
Some teeth prosthetics and some makeup. That's about it.
Did you say it was directed by?
It's written by Scott Snyder.
Is that your pen name?
No, I wish. Oh my god,
this podcast would be way bigger.
Yeah, because I'd be writing Batman right now.
Yeah,
because that's what he does. But yeah, I mean, you should check it out because it's pretty dope. Cool.
Yeah,
I'd do something like that.
I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. It looks like it's good.
Yeah, it's by
an Eisner Award winner.
Yep.
Yep.
Scott Snyder is amazing at almost everything he does. There was a couple hiccups early in his career, but that's not his fault. It's material he was given to write on, but different subject.
We've actually talked about this on the podcast before. We've all kind of gone through our list of like dream projects we would like to see made. Not only like not us doing them, obviously, but just somebody way better making stuff. And there's been two that sticks out to me that haven't been made in one shape or another on film yet. And I would love to see a true to the graphic novel movie of Old Man Logan, like a legit rated R Old Man Logan.
Because that's pretty cool.
Yeah, because that was actually because I started the comic book game later in life, so that was the first story arc that I read, and that's what got me into comics. And then the other one, because growing up my favorite scary movies were always vampire movies, and then vampire movies has had a pretty rough history as of late, to another Scott Snyder book, I would love to see American Vampire get made into some type of TV series.
So. Oh cool. What's that one about? I actually don't know. I'm sorry.
It's all right. And actually, speaking of, it kind of rolls into the Stephen King thing, because Stephen King actually wrote part of the first story arc of it. It's basically, Mike, if you want to go over what it is, you can cheers.
Yeah, it's just a really good vampire story. The theory behind it is like you have different types of vampires. So you have like European vampires, stuff like that. So the American vampire, and it starts the first series is actually there's like a current day and a flashback version of it revolving around the same guy, and it's so well written, and so each nationality of vampire basically has like their own, like there's differences between them, so some of them can actually withstand daylight but like not well, but it doesn't kill them. There's other things that affect other vampires more so than, you know, depending on which one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really good. And then I love Westerns too. I grew up watching a bunch of old Westerns with my granddad, so I've always had a soft spot for Westerns. And the first story arc is like old American West is where it takes place. And it's a lot of fun. And there's been seven volumes of it now. So, you know, HBO, AMC, something like that could take that and
cool.
have another Walking Dead, basically, but a whole different type of genre, I think.
Awesome. Joe, what about you?
Nice.
Oh, the wheels are turning.
Joe wants Mass Effect.
Mass Effect actually would be awesome. No, what I was thinking...
Oh my god, Mass Effect would be killer.
Right?
Guys, I gotta admit to you, I just started playing Mass Effect 2 a few days ago.
Oh, nice.
Don't worry, you can stop after that one.
Just 2 days ago?
Yeah. Weird. Well, what's weird is I got a new laptop, and so I dual booted into Windows, and I was like, huh, I never played Mass Effect 2. I played Mass Effect, and it's amazing. But I never played it, and I bought it on Steam as one of their deals for like $1, you know, and I was just like, yeah, I'll get to it someday, and that was like 4 years ago. So, I installed it, and I played around a little bit. It's cool.
Yeah, it's a great game. The ammo system in the second one was just a little weird because you went from the first one where you had cooldown periods,
yeah,
and then the second one you actually had ammo clips, and it was just kind of a weird
thing
to get across.
Which sucks because I feel like once they, you know, I don't know if Halo invented it, but they at least popularized cooldown periods, and you know, basically the idea of unlimited ammo was so appealing. You know, of like, oh, there's no longer, and same thing with health, you know, not having to find a health bar or a health pack or something like that. I'm just like, oh yeah, just don't get shot too many times too quickly. or don't shoot too many times too quickly. And that was all it was. And that became video games for a while and still kind of is in a lot of ways with health. But it sucks really bad that they went back to that. I like hate hunting for ammo. I feel like it's just one of the least interesting parts of a game. Yeah. Or conserving my ammo. Who wants to conserve ammo?
Right.
Why would I want that as part of my game? I want to like have fun.
Like this is my fantasy. I want to shoot whatever, how much ever I want to.
Maybe I play video games like a frat boy though. Maybe that's what it is.
It's all right.
People are just like, I like the strategy of it. I like to sneak around and be quiet and like figure out the diplomacy. I'm like, no.
Fuck that. Guns blazing.
Yeah. Grand Theft Auto 5 disappoints me. I just need more ammo.
You should get the PC version, do the mods, because you can be a fire-breathing cat.
Really?
Yep.
You can what?
You can be a fire-breathing cat. One of the mods in the PC version.
Oh, I saw it, actually. Yeah, I saw the guy, the cat burning the guy sitting on the park bench.
Yeah, this is super awesome. Plus,
did you see that they modded it so that you can turn every bullet that you shoot into something else?
Yeah.
So they have people like, every bullet you shoot is actually a blue whale. Yeah. You're just firing a blue whale out of your gun.
Which needs to happen, really.
Yeah. Oh, it's so rad.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Why not? That game just went from like, oh, it's a crime simulator to just outlandish weird shit where people dropping, you know, porpoises out of airplanes.
Yeah. Well, that's where the PC master race, that's like their end game.
Yeah. Because most of them, you know, it's very the true thing they want to do.
It's very much like a this is why we can't have nice things situation.
Plus, they're lucky that that game doesn't have destructive cover because a blue whale landing on a large building would destroy that city quickly.
I'd be so sad that I am so sad, and I really, really wish they would have made Grand Theft Auto V destructible. And yeah. I know that they probably had long conversations about how to do that and then decided they couldn't. But oh my God, could you imagine if it was just like Red Faction?
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
Bring whole buildings down on people?
Huh?
Bring whole buildings down on people while robbing banks?
That's kind of what I was thinking. But I mean, the only problem is like online play, I feel like it would just be a constant like Mogadishu. And that's yeah. it. You know, it's just a totally destroyed wasteland after World War II. So.
Look
just,
like Mad Max.
Exactly. Just devolve into Mad Max. People running around in giant cars just killing people.
No spoilers. Haven't seen it yet, but I do know what you're talking about.
People die.
People die. Sorry.
There you go.
Spoiler. Really?
Yep.
Yeah, the driving cars and people killing people is pretty much the biggest spoiler ever, because that's
true.
Most of all that happens.
That's great. Oh, that's great.
It's fantastic, though.
It is. It awesome.
I'm so excited about
one
that.
One of the best movies I've seen in a long time.
I remember seeing the first trailer and of course immediately like, you know, being like, this is something that absolutely must exist. You know, I can't wait. But the thing is I very personally, I always get catfished by big budget action movies.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm always thinking like, this looks awesome. And then, so I've kind of started to wise up and I don't really do it anymore. And I was just like, I'm not, just not going to see anymore because even when the reviews are good, I go and I see it and I hate it. And that was how I became a hater. But with Mad Max, the very first trailer, it was just like, I don't like in any way care about like car explosions in the desert. But I watched that trailer and all I want is more cars exploding in the desert. Like that's all I want.
It's the price of the ticket, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You pay for that ticket. That's what you're getting.
Yeah. We're doing a movie marathon for anyone that's in LA. They can come and join us. And it's we're gonna do a movie hopping on Memorial Day to go see Slow West and Good Kill, and then we're gonna end it with Mad Max.
I just watched Slow West the other day.
Good?
Yeah, it's really good. Michael Fassbender.
Good. Super We haven't seen any of those three.
I won't say anything because there's a lot to spoil in that movie.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, don't say anything.
Yeah, I won't ruin it on there. I had another question, and then I got distracted by explosions.
I have a question piggybacking on what you just said. Now that you both have made movies, like, is it weird to watch a movie now? Do you watch as a fan? Like, can you turn your brain off and just be entertained? Or are you, like, in your head, you know, like, I would have shot that like this, or I would have done this, or anything like that? Or, like, picking up notes from it, too? Or are you able just to be entertained?
I can definitely, for sure, still be entertained. But I'll go through phases where certain things will start to get to me just because it's, like,
for example, when we're in development on a script, and I see a movie where like all of the dialogue is forwarding the plot, it gets a little, it is really hard to watch that. Because you just notice like, oh, like these aren't people. These are just movie characters serving a mechanism of furthering a plot. Like there's no, it's funny. Like they're not saying anything funny. They're not saying anything all that interesting. And I know where this plot's going, but they just keep regurgitating it. That's a little tough sometimes.
Do you feel yourself seeing more flaws in movies because of that?
I don't know.
Like, not like flaws, like, oh, I would have done this differently, but like it almost ruins the, not, I shouldn't say ruins, but like you see it and you're like, oh, well, I guess they could have done better at this because of that. Because like you mentioned, you know, dialogue that doesn't actually serve any purpose other than pushing forward a plot they can't figure out how to explain with just the moving pictures. You know, like someone has to actually say, hey, I'm going to shoot that guy because he killed my wife, instead of showing a flashback or doing some kind of thing to it. Do you see that as like, does that can that ruin a movie for you now that you kind of know?
It doesn't ruin it. And I actually don't mind having certain things explained via dialogue or like simultaneously explained via dialogue and visuals. I definitely don't believe that like film is this like absolutist visual medium, because I think it sounds like saying the obvious, but I truly believe, some people don't, I truly believe a movie is actually both sound and audio, and more specifically it's sound and dialogue. But I think that like when it's like something like the Avengers 2, when it's like, I wish so bad that I would prefer to watch characters saying witty Joss Whedon stuff that has nothing to do with that plot than to hear them talk about the plot constantly. And I know what it is. I know what the plot is mostly, but it's just kind of like, wow, this is really uninteresting talking. But then again, I'm not bad mouthing Avengers 2 either. I think that it's something that's like, oh, it's definitely not a movie made for me, but it is. I remember watching it thinking like, oh, I'm so bored. They just keep talking about the plot. And I wish so bad someone would just say something like a human being that has nothing to do with the plot.
Gotcha.
I get on, I have absolutely no ability to think critically while I'm watching a movie. And what I mean by that, I don't mean critically like as a movie critic. I mean, think critically like a human being like, oh, that makes no logical sense. I can't do that during the movie. So for me, I'm always just kind of along for a ride. I'm sure that makes me a great audience member because I'm a total idiot. But and that's kind of what's funny is like I'll watch movies with my girlfriend and she'll be like, where do you think this is going? And I'm like, well, one, I have no damn idea, even if it's the most predictable thing in the world. But two is like, how did you even think of where it's going? I don't know why. I'm just like in this total stream of consciousness when I watch. I'm a pretty like a pretty dumb movie watcher in my own opinion. But I also feel like that makes me kind of just enjoy stuff as a straight up audience member. Yeah, I mean, you learn lessons as a filmmaker, of course, but you movies aren't like transparent for me. You know, like when I watch Lord of the Rings, I just see like an event that happened. I don't see like, oh, that's like a great shot, and there was like a cameraman that shot that, and like a lighting guy that lit that. You know what I mean? I don't think about that. I just look at it and I'm like, that's just an event that happened that I'm watching right now. You know?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting that you say that, because if you watch Resolution and Spring, you have no idea where that movie's going. And yeah. I was constantly trying to figure out what was going to happen next, and I was way wrong until you guys did the reveals. So that's kind of interesting that you can turn your brain off and not predict stuff, and then come back with two movies with basically no clue in the first half what was happening. It was just enjoyable, you know.
I definitely deconstruct it afterwards quite a bit, and then on top of that, it's not like I'm not thinking about where it's going. That doesn't mean that I therefore enjoy the movie. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, it's normal. It's rare that I like look at a setup in terms of the payoff that's coming, in terms of just while I'm watching a movie. When you deconstruct it, you can see, and you know, the really brilliant ones are things like, The Departed, where the setup and payoffs are so intertwined, but also somehow unnoticeable. And then there's the opposite example where it's not that they're like a you know, something like well, I haven't seen the Avengers 2, but like Transformers, where it's not that the setup and payoff is obvious, but it's that it's inconsequential, you know. And I think that's like that's swinging the pendulum the other way, where it's just like, oh, it doesn't really matter. It's just an arbitrary setup for an arbitrary payoff, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think that helps kind of inform the movies a little bit better while you're making them, so that you don't feel like you don't understand like what the without even the thought of like the tropes and the pillars of how a movie needs to be, and you know, how like certain genres are supposed to go, all of that entering your mind can actually affect your filmmaking, even if you're actively trying to avoid it, you know. So it's kind of a nice thing.
I can imagine.
Was that nonsense? Did I just ramble like nonsense right now?
Not at all. It was perfectly okay.
No, yeah.
Perfectly okay. That's what my mom calls me all the time.
We have that in common then. My mom says that too. Not about you though.
Oh,
I meant that about me.
No, I think she does. She does.
She might. She does. Away from that now, I had a question. I listened to you guys on a different podcast, and you guys talk about an upcoming movie you're working on. Mm-hmm. The Aleister Crowley movie.
Mm-hmm. Which one did you listen to?
It was Bizarre States.
Bizarre States, cool. Yeah.
Just because, you know, I'm a big Chobot fan. So I was, when I was younger and still now, like weirdly obsessed with serial killers. That's kind of why I like that book Severed a lot, but also because I like serial killers a lot. And Aleister Crowley has a huge following. You mentioned it on the show, like where he's seen as more of like the first, being like the first Satanist ever, and then like goes into how he didn't really believe in Satan, all that fun stuff. What made you want to? I mean, I heard the story on that podcast about how you guys got involved in the project, but how has it been making, like looking at that project? How are you gonna put your twist on? I guess my question is like, how are you gonna make it? Are you gonna go into supernatural? I guess really the thing I want to know, or is it, are you gonna make it more realistic?
It's very much grounded in reality, but simultaneously, it does have a lot of pulp elements to it. And as, in terms of like whether something supernatural happens in the movie or not, it's actually sort of one of the central mysteries of the movie. I'm just kind of playing with the idea of, you know, was Aleister Crowley the one guy who did do something supernatural? And a lot of that's achieved by just sort of in the storytelling, without getting too into esoteric spiritual, like Western esotericism and stuff like that. Just kind of playing with the idea of how mysterious his beliefs were, and kind of trying to give the audience a chill by the big what if of whether he actually did it or not. It's not any more a horror film than Spring is, but it's definitely a scarier movie. Like you usually have to differentiate between the two. A lot of the movie kind of feels like the first 15 minutes of The Exorcist or something like that, where you can feel something mysterious and dark happening in the movie, but whether we answer exactly what that is, or whether we answer whether it's real or not, that is part of the fun of watching it from beginning to end, or reading it at this point. Yeah, in the same way, in some ways that like it's not the exact same idea, but like in Spring, we're kind of positing that something that appears to be supernatural might actually be inexplicable by, you know, that you can actually sort of imagine how Louise works. It's not that exact same idea, of course, you know, but in the same way that it still feels like it just happened in our world, whereas you can watch a lot of horror movies, you know, or any kind of movie with a supernatural force, and you're like, oh, this isn't our world, this is like a cinematic experience, you know. This one's in some ways kind of trying to make you feel like perhaps it actually did happen. whether or not it means that there's nothing supernatural, that's a little bit more up for debate.
How'd you guys get involved in the project?
Oh, yeah. Fry, we skipped over that. Sorry. You explained it on the other podcast, but if you can go over that real quick.
Oh, yeah. We were at Cannes taking meetings on Spring, trying to put that together. And we just randomly met a producer there who had an idea for a movie about Aleister Crowley. And then she saw our first movie, Resolution, and she thought we'd be a good match for it. And we were just basically hired onto it from there. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It's pretty rare that you have ideas brought to you as a filmmaker that you simultaneously find interesting, and that also there's like developments financed, like you're going to get paid to write the script. Those are very, very, very rare things that get coupled together. So it's pretty cool. We were really lucky.
Where in the process are you guys in with that movie right now?
Right now the script is done. And so we're kind of starting the actual nuts and bolts of getting it all together to go shoot it, which is just kind of like every movie, but this one being even bigger than Spring, it's a little bit bigger than our regular kind of like bootstrapping it from the very ground up. So it's kind of like a chicken and egg situation of like trying to lock down cast while trying to lock down financing. And, you know, we did a location scout and trying to figure out our major partners because we produce our own films too. So that's kind of, it's always getting into this kind of funny little chicken or egg vortex where it's just like the financier is like, who's attached? And you're just like, oh, no one's attached yet. They're like, all right, tell us when someone's attached. And then, you know, the cast would be doing the same things. Like, do you guys have financing? Well, we'll get financing if someone attaches. Let us know when you have financing. You know, so that's like a hilarious, I'm sorry, I wish it was hilarious, except it's our lives and business. But yeah, that's how a lot of the films go. Luckily, though, the film's just now getting going in terms of, you know, the script was finished just a few weeks ago. And so far the response has been so good that it seems like we shouldn't have too much of a problem. But you never know. I mean, I hope I'm not listening to this podcast 3 years from now just crying into my cardboard box.
Hopefully not either. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be a download for us, so that'd be kind of good.
That's true. At least in 3 years we have listeners.
Yeah. Bright side.
Yeah. So real quick on the Aleister Crowley movie. Two questions. You mentioned the name of it being one thing on Bizarre States, but then online it's listed as another. Just a personal question. What is the name of it going to be? Do you know yet?
The name is The Wickedest Man in the World.
Okay.
And on IMDb, it should be Untitled Aleister Crowley Project. But I know in some places, I think like on Wikipedia, it says the name is Beasts, and that was a previous title. Same script.
Okay. Yeah, because that was the question, because at one point, Beast was everywhere listed, like Aleister Crowley movie Beast, and then it just went away. And then obviously you mentioned it being the wickedest man on earth or in the world on Bizarre States, and I was like, well, that's a better name for it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a better name for sure.
The other question, more of like a personal spoiler for it, how much of his life does it span in the movie, if you don't mind telling us? I'm just wondering because thinking about someone to cast as Aleister Crowley.
Yeah, the events of the movie are inspired by his entire life, but in terms of like very literally, the movie takes place in 1 week. Okay. In his life when he was about 25.
Okay. I was wondering because like I can't imagine the fun trying to cast like three different ages of Aleister Crowley.
It's interesting. It's really as his whole life is so interesting, and we've like talked about the idea of doing like a, you know, a TV show about the whole thing, or like a mini series or something.
That'd be nuts.
But
how cool would that be?
I know it'd be so much fun. The hard thing about doing, unfortunately, the sort of maybe sort of shallow problem of doing a movie about him later in life is that you know, that caricature image of this this sort of like, you know, out of shape, very very bald headed, almost like he just, he, there's so many things about him that later in life that it's like, oh, it's not an attractive, sexy thing. I think that there's, we've had expressed to us at certain points that that's one of the hard things of doing his life later on. So yeah, I guess you don't have to, but you do like Sean Connery or something.
Yeah.
but it's tough. And he's, and I think it's less, almost more attractive is that he, later, you look at him and later in life and it's like, oh, like he's so cool, he's so interesting, but he also looks really silly.
Yeah. With his crazy pointy teeth.
Yeah, really? With the pointy teeth and the,
yeah, he like filed his teeth down to fangs.
Wearing that bow tie.
Yeah, the bow tie.
Suit. And, but I don't know, at the same time. He's a really fun, there's no way, the fun thing about him is there's no way of getting around his humor. So I don't know, maybe you do it as like with really odd, weird humor. But there's actually a really, really, really not good movie. I forgot what it's called. I think it's some places it's called Chemical Wedding and some places it's called something else. Where it is a story about like the pretty much untrue caricature of Aleister Crowley. And it's just, it's this guy who looks like Telly Savalas in like a pink and like a purple satin suit with a walking cane, walking around talking really evil off of the third act. It's like, oh, this is so bad. Mm-hmm. And that movie's about his, you know, the caricature of him in, later in life.
I was also really excited to get this movie, or to see, when I was first researching Crowley, because there is no real Crowley movie per se. And I found this movie called Crowley, and you know, it's got this giant flaming pentagram on the cover, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's not that good, or, you know, something like that, or kind of like caricaturistic or something like that. And you look into it and they called it Crowley, and it's maybe the most interesting story of all time. Right. You look onto actually, let me read you the description on IMDb really quick.
Okay.
What this movie Crowley is about. And you're thinking like, oh, they've got the best subject matter I can imagine. You know, Aleister Crowley, the most interesting thing ever. Oh, it's not showing up on IMDb. Hang on.
So, if,
well, it's not going to show up. Basically, The summary is like they implant, like in like an experiment, they implant Aleister Crowley's brain into somebody and like he starts killing people in like the 80s, and it's just literally, I think it's just like a slasher movie or something, a supernatural slasher movie, and they're worried about like Aleister Crowley like bringing up about the apocalypse of the devil or something. And somehow, instead of making like all of the cool little things you can make about Aleister Crowley, they made like just some weird movie about possession.
That's the one. That's the same. That's called Chemical Wedding in other countries, I think.
Yeah.
Originally. And yeah, I skimmed through it, and the last act is him. I'm pretty sure he's literally wearing a purple satin suit. He looks like Telly Savalas. and he's like scheming the end of the world, the apocalypse. But yeah, I think it's super low budget though.
Oh yeah.
Correct. It's like super low
motion.
Yeah,
I might have seen that one because I watched a lot of that stuff. That showed me a picture of it, of the cover. I think I have seen that before.
I know I've seen that cover before.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've seen the movie.
I used to watch a lot of those awful movies.
Here we go. So the first half of the, you know, of the synopsis is he's known as the wickedest man in the world, or simply the Beast. More than 60 years after his death, the demonic life and works of British occultist Aleister Crowley has continued to capture our darkest imaginations. You know, so you're thinking like, all right, cool. It's all about Aleister Crowley. This is in this provocative supernatural thriller, a virtual reality experiment gone wrong sends the soul of infamous madman into the body of a shy university professor. But even as Crowley creates all new orgies of depraved pleasures and black magic, is he now preparing to unleash the ultimate occult event upon the world?
Sounds about right.
What?
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
That seems more like it could have been a Tales from a Crypt movie.
I mean, again, just think about it. They make a movie called Hitler, and it has nothing to do with World War II. Like, are you kidding?
It's about a guy who goes fishing.
And painting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's a new Bob Ross.
Hitler played by Bob Ross. Good job, Joe. I like it.
You're welcome.
All right. So anybody else have any questions on either side?
Yeah, just because this podcast, we do a lot of like favorites and we bullshit about movies and comics a lot. So just on a personal note, and we'll let you talk about anything you want to talk about here in a second, too. But on a personal note, you don't have to give me the exact one because it's super short notice, but a favorite movie or at least a movie from each of you that like you can keep going back to each time.
Children of Men.
Ooh, good one.
That's a good one.
That was fast, too. Like, that's locked and loaded. You had that ready to go.
I love that one. I got to go with probably Almost Famous, probably.
Oh, so good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right on.
Good one. Is there anything you just wanted to bring up before the end of this little hour?
Are you guys still doing any promotion stuff for spring, or are you just fully focused on the next one?
Yeah, we're still promoting spring. I think, honestly, there's nothing in particular going down, except I know that the Canadian release just happened, and on Friday, the UK release is happening. So that's going to be all really cool. But basically, I mean, you know, we're really open books, and we're easy to get a hold of. So if you just tweet at us, either of us, you can, you know, you don't even have to ask a question. Just yell at me about, you know, your problems in life, and I'll work out something for you. You know, my mom's a psychologist, so is my girlfriend. So,
oh, you must be very analyzed then.
Yeah, thoroughly. Well, that's the thing, is that's why I'm so stable. Is every single night they trade off giving me, you know, psychoanalysis. So it's really good. I mean, it's while I'm sleeping. It's all hypnosis theory.
Nice.
Therapy, and it feels really good, honestly. And then any night that that they're too busy, normally I'm with Justin's mom. So
fair enough.
That was a your mom joke. That wasn't serious.
No, we got that.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I didn't have the drum sound effect lined up to end it there for you. So
yeah.
The best part about your mom jokes is when you have to point them out.
Oh, is that what it is?
No, that was your mom joke.
One thing we didn't touch upon is that Spring reached number one on the top of iTunes.
Yeah, it was.
How
it was
excited! Yeah,
it was in horror for a few weeks, I think. That was pretty cool. That was really surprising. I mean, we were confident we would do pretty well, but it was fun to see that. I don't know. When it's weird when you're doing the marketing campaign, you're doing so much stuff, whether it's working on the poster with the distributor or the trailer, and then up through you start doing all this press, and you're just trying to get like the biggest outlets you can and try to get the movie out there so people are aware of it. But it's weird because you just never know what all that stuff is actually doing, you know? And then it's pretty cool when you see that the movie is actually, you know, people are actually aware of it and they care about it enough to, you know, like make a transaction on iTunes. It's pretty cool. It's interesting. It's interesting to think back on like, what was the thing that like drove most of those the people that want to see it? It's cool. It's interesting.
And I just want to point out too, we haven't talked a lot about it because we don't want to spoil it. We want people to go buy it and watch it. But the effects were pretty amazing too. Like I was not expecting that while watching the movie, but you guys did a great job on that. Like it was a good shock moment in the movie. So
thank God. That would really suck if people are like, guys, great movie, great character work. I hope that, you know, George Lucas does like a digital remastering of some of the effects work in there. That would just be terrible. I wish we could take credit for it. It was this amazing company called Masters Effects they did American Mary. I hope you've seen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they did American Mary, and that was what turned us on to them. And you know, they kind of helped us design this like nature based. Not really. We didn't give them any reference photos from like other movies. We just gave them photos from nature, just said, like, can we make it look like it actually evolved from something? And they're like, that sounds like a cool idea. And they made Louise.
Yeah, they nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
I think that's it for everybody. No more questions.
No.
Unless you know, Justin or Aaron got any for us.
What are you guys drinking tonight?
I had a lot of water and iced tea.
That was a boring answer.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing for me.
Cool.
Please,
the other guy go, Everclear!
No, I haven't been drinking anything tonight, but usually when it's drinking, it's Jack and Coke, so.
All right.
Yeah. Classy man over here.
Yeah, I like to keep it low-key, you know.
With a bamboo umbrella in it.
Yeah, because I like to feel special.
Cool.
All right, well, so unless you guys got anything else you want to bring up, I will post all the information about Justin and Aaron in the show notes.
Yeah, we're going to promote the shit out of this, guys.
Cool. With, like, your Twitter handles and everything, too, so hopefully you'll see, like, three extra followers besides us.
I can promise at least three.
Yeah.
Three more followers, please.
Yep. For each of you. Three each.
Three each.
Good.
So that's it for us. Thank you guys for
joining
us.
Thanks a lot.
It
was really cool having you on.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And, you guys are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So the end is We Are Comes Naturally. We are
Joe.
Mike.
I'm Cody, and our special guests again were
Aaron.
Justin.
All right.
You guys hit your cue.
Yes. Nice. Unlike last time.
Call that hitting the post.
Yep. And so, like, we always end the show. That's it. So, internet, go fuck yourselves.
Bye, guys.